Good evening. This is the KRFP Evening Report for Tuesday, October 11th, 2011. I'm Lee Robartis. In the news tonight, Northern Idaho pipeline to resume pumping. Moscow City Committee considers increasing the cost of a street closure permit from $36 to about $250. Moscow City Council gets update on tar sand shipments, one load expected this week. And Missoula commissioners question judge decision on injunction in the megaload case for using two-lane highways in Montana. We'll have details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. And live in the KRFP studios, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. ConocoPhillips has announced they will reopen the 5 miles of the Yellowstone pipeline between Caddo and Enoville to gasoline flow after tests on the line showed the 57-year-old pipeline was still in good enough shape. ConocoPhillips spokesperson Jeff Callender said, "We've gone through all of our procedures for verifying the integrity of the line and all of the Department of Transportation's." He said the company will keep a team of people in place to continue monitoring the Yellowstone pipeline after it restarts. The Moscow City Council's Public Works Committee asked city staff for more clarity on barricade rules for its proposed street closure policy yesterday. The committee also asked for more clarity on insurance requirements for closing streets for non-parade events. The new policy proposes raising the fee for closing a two-block section of Main Street for non-parade events from $35 to $250 per event. The draft policy would require another $50 for after-hours or weekend events and another $50 if the closure extends beyond daylight hours. In addition, if the event requires closing 3 blocks from 3rd to 6th Street, there would be another $50 added to the fee. The policy divides street closures into three categories: parades, closures of major streets like Main Street for event, and street party events on smaller streets. Most of the discussion centered around closing larger streets for events. City Public Works Director Les McDonald said the issue is how much the city spends on street closure events.
Part of what we're trying to do is make sure that everybody's aware of what our true costs are. Now, we may choose in the end not to charge those full costs and take the approach that the city is going to, if you will, support some of these types of, you know, community activities in a fashion of maybe not charging our full cost for everything that we do. But it's something we want to be aware of, that if that is what's happening, then we need to know that is what's happening. Okay. So there are some things in here in this first section, condition on non-parade closures, about full costs. The current fee is $35 per event. Actual cost for street department resources, approximately $250 for event for non-parade closures. So a question there to consider is, do we maintain our typical $35 fee that we have now, or should it be something higher that's perhaps more in line with what our actual costs are?
City Public Works Director Les McDonald. Committee members felt insurance was not needed for block parties on smaller streets, but Councilmember Wayne Krause said he has questions about insurance for street closure events on the larger streets like Main Street.
I can understand the need for having insurance, but not knowing what that cost would be, I'd hate to have it be so high that it'd be prohibitive of these events even happening then. Sure.
And we can do some research.
I
and
kind of have an idea what kind of money we're talking about for something like that.
That was City Council Member Wayne Krause. City Council Member Tom Lamar recounted how street parties, which occurred just after he moved to town, helped introduce him to the community that would become his home.
Oh, when this came before us, before I talked about my experience with the city of Moscow, when I first came here was a street block party on Main Street. It was in the early 80s or something, and it was a lot of fun, and I found it to be very attractive, you know, creating this attractive place to be. And there were two block parties this summer that I'm aware of on Main Street. One was for the Josh Ritter signing, and another one was, I think, a church party or something. And I think all of those are really good for the you know, development of a sense of community focused in the downtown area. I like seeing those things happen. I think that when other communities have similar kinds of things, I think it really makes it feel good. So I want to make sure that we don't have something that prevents these things from happening, but we can work with whomever it is to make it go. I feel the same way about neighborhood block parties. If we can encourage people to get to know their neighbors and to spend time outside and share things in their neighborhood, I think that's a really good thing. So I hope that we can continue to make that work with whatever we're doing here.
That was City Council Member Tom Lamar. City staff will return to the Public Works Committee with some clarification on the policy before the proposal advances to the full City Council. The City of Moscow is seeking $12,800 from ExxonMobil's hired tar sands shipment hauler Mammut for extra Moscow police activities during the transport of oversized loads through the streets of Moscow during the last 3 months. A letter from City Supervisor Gary Riedner to Mammut project manager Darren Bland says $600 of that amount is for administrative expenses for special services from the police department. The rest is for police overtime. When broken down by day, the largest expenses come from the night of August 25th, when the first of the larger split megaloads came through the city and six people were arrested on misdemeanor charges for standing or sitting in the middle of Washington Street in front of the convoy, stopping it for nearly half an hour. Another big night was when the next split megaload came through on August 31st, when there was an overwhelming police presence from at least three agencies in downtown Moscow. Besides the $12,800 for police work from July through September, the city will send a separate request for police overtime reimbursement for last Thursday night's megaload shipment. Two cyclists riding alongside the megaload convoy were arrested Thursday. For the time being, the city plans to send weekly reimbursement requests to Mammut for as long as extra police presence is required during tar sands shipments. City Council Member Walter Steed said he wondered if weekly billing was the best way to do things. Here's Steed, followed by City Supervisor Gary Riedner.
I did not want to wait until a year or two from now when they're through and then send them a bill to get stiffed on it. I mean, so I thought more contemporaneous billing was a good idea. I'm wondering if weekly is too tight for both of us.
Prefer to call it a request for reimbursement.
Right.
Whatever it is.
Instead of each time.
Well, they're fixing to go to two a week, I'm told. So you're going to be.
I thought weekly would be easier on staff.
Well,
but if we have to go to monthly, I have no problem with that.
I don't know about have to. I thought it'd be easier on both staff and on Mammut to get a monthly bill, both for us to generate it and for them to pay it.
Well, it's fairly easy to generate. Doesn't hurt to go ahead and send it out. Weekly, monthly really makes no difference. I'll work with Don Palmer. We'll figure something out. I think the message was clear, though. Make prompt requests, right, and we will do so. Other than that, there is another load scheduled this week. In discussing with Chief Duke, there is a plan perhaps to have two loads here in next week, and he will be meeting with the Idaho State Police to discuss that.
That was Moscow City Supervisor Gary Riedner answering a question from City Council Member Walter Steed yesterday. Riedner told the City Council's Administrative Committee Mammut has increased the amount of advance time for notification to the city of tar sands shipments coming through Moscow and U.S. 95. Here's Supervisor Riedner, along with a question from City Council Member Dan Karskalin and a comment from Moscow Police Chief David Duke.
I think the chief's here if he wants to comment on it. It seems like the days of 1 or 2 days notices isn't the case anymore. So getting sufficient notice for the chief to get his staffing together. We've encouraged them. As you know, there was a copy of a letter that was sent out to ITD requesting them to please let the information flow from them rather than put the onus on the city, as it is not the city's project.
Well, I realize we're getting the information, but I don't know that it's getting to the public as quickly as we were hoping.
I don't know that. I know that they have been posting it. I've been informed by other folks before I had any notice.
Yeah, I've seen it from other places as well. Chief, did you have a comment?
Yeah, the director Nels with ITD has set a precedent and protocol that they will now announce loads moving on their website, so citizens can go to that website and just find out when the next load is due.
However, the three loads ExxonMobil announced would be coming through Moscow on Wednesday night were not reported on the Idaho Transportation Department website as of 5:15 this afternoon. Wild Idaho Rising Tide announced that activists in Moscow and Coeur d'Alene would be protesting the three Imperial Oil tar sands shipments that would be leaving the port of Lewiston at 8 p.m. on Wednesday and traveling on U.S. Highway 95 and Interstate 90. The activist group is asking that people meet 9 p.m. on Wednesday at the empty lot north of the Moscow Building Supply near the corner of Rodeo Drive and North Main Street. The protesters plan to walk inside the People's Megalode, an outline in the shape of the footprint of a normal split megalode, from the north side of Moscow to the south side of Moscow. Two of the megalodes ExxonMobil announced for tomorrow night will be 375,000 pounds each and 195 to 200 feet in length. They will be between 20 and 23 feet wide. A third tar sands module will be 70,000 pounds. The three megalodes are expected to leave the port of Lewiston at about 8 p.m. Wednesday night and travel about half hour apart and then to meet on the south end of Moscow and go through town as a single convoy. Wild Idaho Rising Tide says to monitor the megalodes on Idaho roads or join activists for demonstrations in Coeur d'Alene on Thursday or Friday nights, people should converge at Moscow City Hall on the corner of 2nd and Washington Streets at 7 p.m. on Wednesday or 8 p.m. Thursday and Friday. A Missoula County Commissioner has questioned State Judge Ray Dayton's decision last Thursday to modify his injunction against ExxonMobil for tar sand shipments on two-lane roads through the state. The modification allows tar sand shipments on U.S. 12 between Lolo Pass and the town of Lolo and on U.S. 93 between Lolo and Missoula, opening the way for split megaloads to come from Lewiston via U.S. Highway 12 and then move on to the interstate highway system in Montana. Missoula County was the lead plaintiff in the lawsuit against the 30-foot-high megalodes using two-lane highways throughout most of the state, contending MTD did not do adequate environmental assessments of the impacts of turnouts that would be built for the loads, which would weigh up to 590,000 pounds. Commission Chair Gene Curtis said, "It's going to be a high-wide corridor, a permanent industrial corridor, because there's just truck after truck after truck coming through here for all kinds of projects." Curtis said, "She especially questions the decision because of the movement of Nickel Brothers oversized loads bound for Canada. Those are not tar sand shipments, but compare in size to the ExxonMobil loads." Imperial Oil spokesperson Pius Rollheiser in Calgary said late last week the company was pleased with the ruling, and he said it allows for hauling larger loads on two-lane highways all the way, but he added that hauling the larger loads on the two-lane highways all the way to Canada is still the preferred route of the company. Rollheiser said about 70 loads have arrived in Alberta. Some have originated at the Port of Lewiston, others at Pasco and Vancouver, Washington. He said some of the later modules were built so they could be more easily reconfigured for interstate travel if needed. Going back to City of Moscow news, the Public Works Finance Committee yesterday approved a request by Moscow Police Chief David Duke to accept a $420,734 grant from the U.S. Justice Department Community-Oriented Policing Program to hire two new police officers. The money will pay the first 3 years' salary for the two officers. Duke said the program will bring back officers to fill the traffic officer and school resource officer positions. The chief said, since the University of Idaho reduced funding paid to the police department for patrols on campus, the number of officers has gone down from a peak of 34 2 years ago. You're listening to the KRFP Evening Report. This is KRFP in Moscow. The Spokane City Council voted 5-2 last night to repeal police ombudsman investigative powers that they approved unanimously earlier this year. Council members who voted to repeal the ombudsman's power said an arbitrator had determined in July the power to investigate police brutality and misconduct constituted a change in work conditions and therefore must be approved by the city police union, as stipulated under Washington law. Due to the vote, Ombudsman Tim Burns will no longer have the authority to independently investigate misconduct, but will still be allowed to sit in on internal investigations by the police department of themselves. The ombudsman position was created during the firestorm surrounding the death of disabled janitor Otto Zem, who went into a coma and died in 2006 after being attacked by police batons and tasers in a Division Street convenience store. Zem was also hogtied on his stomach with the weight of police on top of him for several minutes. The trial of Spokane Police Officer Carl Thompson Jr. begins tomorrow in Yakima. Thompson is facing federal charges stemming from his role in the death of Otto Zem. Councilmember John Snyder, who voted with the majority last night, said the city has a better chance of improving police oversight if they repeal the ordinance and negotiate with the police guild rather than appealing the arbitrator's decision. Snyder said if the mayor negotiates a police contract with the union that does not include ombudsman oversight, then the city council can reject the contract. Councilmember Nancy McLaughlin said she's concerned the police union will want higher pay in exchange for allowing more police ombudsman power to investigate brutality, and that will make it difficult to balance the city's budget. The city has a projected $8 million deficit for fiscal year 2012. A group calling itself Add the Words Idaho, which was unsuccessful in pushing Idaho lawmakers in 2011, to hear a bill that would ban workplace and housing discrimination against people who are gay, lesbian, or transgender, has resumed their efforts with a new campaign starting this week, which is National Coming Out Week. Earlier this year, activists peppered the doors of a Senate committee chair with sticky notes, but lawmakers said there wasn't enough support among Idaho's conservative legislature to advance the measure. Idaho law now forbids discrimination based on race, religion, color, national origin, and mental or physical disabilities. A new policy at the Pocatello-Chubbuck School District states students in the Eastern Idaho school who learn online from home can no longer take one or two classes at public schools without being enrolled at least part-time. The Pocatello-Chubbuck School District does not receive funding for students who do not attend at least 150 minutes of class each day, a policy which has upset many parents. District 25 spokesperson Shirley Allen said the policy was changed earlier this year amid concerns over attendance and state funding. Parent Heather Sandy of Pocatello said of the policy, it is adversely affecting homeschool students who want to take music and athletics. Sandy enrolled her children in an online public charter school based in Boise 2 years ago. The Moscow School District's new long-range planning task force will meet at 6 p.m. Thursday in the boardroom of the district office at 650 North Cleveland Street. The meeting is open to the public and will function as a work session for task force members as well. The task force will study the school district's facilities, review plant needs, explore the future of district playfields, and make a recommendation for facilities improvements to the district in the spring. Task force members include Superintendent Dale Kleinert, Maintenance Supervisor Cliff Votman, Moscow High School Principal Bob Celebrezzi, West Park School Principal Bill Marino, Moscow Chamber of Commerce Executive Director Stephen Hacker, and other teachers and community members in the city. The task force is next expected to meet again November 6th, December 8th, January 12th, February 9th, and March 8th in the district office boardroom, each meeting being at 6 p.m. Well, that's it for the KRFP evening report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather from the National Weather Service, there'll be a 20% chance of showers tonight. Breezy, west winds 10 to 20 with gusts up to 30 miles an hour. Otherwise, mostly cloudy, low 41. Partly sunny tomorrow, high 53. Wind gusts out of the west up to 20. Partly cloudy, low 41 tomorrow night. And partly sunny on Thursday, high 56. 20% chance of showers Thursday night and Friday. Low 43, high 58. Currently partly cloudy, 56 degrees in Moscow. Thanks for tuning in to the KRFP Evening Report. Coming up next is Change Surfer Radio, followed by Flashpoints, the daily investigative news magazine from Pacifica Radio. Remember, if you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, you can become a member of Radio Free Moscow. Memberships are $35 a year, $20 for students. You can mail your memberships to Radio Free Moscow, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. That's Radio Free Moscow, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. Or you can check things out online. Also, Jim Roach assisted with tonight's newscast. I'm Lee Robartis, and have a pleasant night. This is KRFP Moscow. Stand by for more information programming, and then music programming starts at 7:30. Stay tuned, KRFP Moscow.